As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA Show,
Monday through
on The Athletic Podcast Network.
From the Golden Gate to the New York Bay.
What I have access to is a bit different than the public.
Tamper with you.
Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Kane, Anthony Slater, and Fred Katz.
To be able to bring people together.
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
The trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
I tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what
happened.
Here's your host, Sam Amick.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, NBA national writer from The Athletic, coming at you with my co-host for the week. We are down a man. Fred Katz, resident Knicks beat writer, is not joining us, not feeling very well this week. Fred, get well. You can hear me a little bit. I'm struggling.
The Knicks have Slater. Sent him into just a tailspin of confusion about all their strong play. I mean, they look like one of the best teams in the league right now.
He's so tired from writing all these winning game stories that take the positivity to pull it out of Fred Katz. It just sucked the life out of him. Love you, Fred. But he'll be back next week. I sound like Barry White, a very dated and old reference, but hopefully the listeners don't mind the new deeper tones coming my way. The little winter cold got the best of me. But Slater, Mr. Anthony Slater, Warriors beat writer, fellow West Coaster, haven't talked to you in a couple weeks, man. How are you?
I'm good. You know, this was a really good weekend of NBA basketball. Like, just the games were very good. And if they felt important, more important than they had prior to the break, for sure. And, like, preach. You know, obviously it helps when they're competitive games. And a lot of them, you know, yesterday, what was it? Nuggets went OT. Warriors Wolves was very close late. There was a fourth quarter comeback. And then obviously that Lakers Mavericks game. Yep. You go back to Saturday, you have that wild finish with Tatum and Embiid. Embiid was one of, like, the greatest non shots in NBA history. And then obviously we might get into it later, but Kings Clippers was something. So.
Why am I blanking? Yes, it was one of the best post,
shots that didn't count.
Thank you, my lord. Embiid's shot was incredible, but who the hell just did it last night? It happened again 2 nights later.
It was Paul George.
Thank you. Yeah, was it Paul?
Yeah,
is that right? Yeah,
yeah. It was Paul George from like three, you know, basically half court. Would have won it. But
I was watching that game with my younger son, and I've said I don't know that I've ever seen that, and now we saw it 2 nights out of 3. So wild stuff, and I'm with you on the action being good. We will talk later in the pod about, I think we might pontificate a little bit about the old load management discussion and how, like, refreshing it is to finally see these guys out there a bit, but also some other spots where guys didn't play, and I was a little puzzled by that. But let me set the stage for this week's Tampering Pod. Here's what we are planning on getting into. We do have some news of the week, Slater, that I want to tackle. So real quick, we're going to hit on Quinn Snyder to the Hawks. Damian Lillard's 71-point performance against Houston. And then, per our Shams Charania, some progress in the CBA talks between the players' union and the league. That's a good sign for basketball fans that certainly don't want any kind of work stoppage that I do not see happening. Then on the back end, we got to handicap the home stretch when it comes to this, you know, what I think is going to be a fun and furious finish with so many teams, so much parity, fighting for playoff position. And then there's a lot to get into there. Not the least of which is, little teaser here in our backyard is, man, the Kings came out strong out of the break and they've had some fireworks and had a little fun. So let's get to the news of the week. Quinn Snyder, I'm going to start with that story. He leaves the Utah Jazz, you know, a while back in a pretty, I always thought, a pretty interesting fashion, meaning that, you know, he sees the writing on the wall when Danny Ainge comes in to head up the front office, sees that, you know, Danny is notorious for kind of flipping rosters on their heads, but even more nuanced than that, just like, you know, really creating a vision with a team the way he wants to. And the question, I think, for me, the second that Danny Ainge came to town in Utah was, there was no acrimony between he and Quinn, but it was definitely a question of, all right, what does this mean for Quinn and how he might see his future? Because Quinn always had a lot of voice in that Jazz organization when Dennis Lindsay was running the front office. And so Quinn ends up, you know, during that whole time when they traded Donovan Mitchell, trade Rudy Gobert, Quinn heads for the exits. And he was going to always be a hot commodity on the coaching market for his next stop. I like this fit in Atlanta a lot. He signs a 5-year, roughly $40 million contract to take over a team that is underperforming, that entered this season post DeJounte Murray trade.
That's one of the more higher paid coaching contracts.
It's pretty high. Yeah. No, I would agree. I don't have the entire pay scale, but it's a pretty good number. And it's also, I think the reason I mentioned the Jazz backdrop is because, unless I've missed it, I don't think there's any formal front office title attached to Quinn's hiring, but I think it is safe to say that, like, you know, he's going to be heard on the personnel front. And I think,
saying is, like, the timing makes a lot of sense where it's not necessarily a power vacuum in Atlanta, but obviously you have Landry Fields is the name we know that has stepped into power, and Kyle Korver has stepped in, Tony Ressler's, you know, but they're clearly rearranging stuff, and it is at a time where a coach can come in and you're not like unseating somebody who's like, you know, built this full roster.
It's the polar opposite of Utah. It really is. And that's not said with any, I mean, I've obviously written some tough stuff about the Hawks, but listen, they deserve a chance to take a crack at this thing. And I've said before that Landry Fields has a very good reputation, you know, despite his inexperience. You know, he's got a runway here to try to do some good things with this team. But it is the polar opposite from Utah when it comes to Danny coming in, you know, with a lifetime of experience and a long, long resume and a reputation that didn't leave a lot of oxygen in the room for somebody like Quinn. And it is, you know, in Atlanta, it's very different. If you go back, Slater, you know, and I'd written a lot about this at the time, you know, when the kind of fallout happens with Travis Schlenk and, you know, he's not there anymore. And then they are essentially trying to figure out how to move forward. They talked to Chris Grant at one point, you know, an experienced executive, and the idea was we need more experience in the room. They didn't end up, you know, adding Chris to the front office, but they had serious talks with him, you know, and if anybody doesn't know, former Cavs GM was working with the Spurs. So you saw where Tony Ressler, the owner, was looking for ways to add experienced voices. And I think Quinn, this was a really, really good hire for them. He's a guy who is just widely respected on the coaching front, has a great dynamic and vibe with players, but he does it in the kind of way, in my opinion, where it should work well for their group, and specifically Trae Young. And the idea that, you know, I think Trae and Quinn can flourish together. It's not like he's coming in here as one of those old school coaches where, oh, Trae's about to get checked. Like, Quinn will check him, but Quinn will also partner with him, and Quinn will try to make this thing work. And you know, I think they're going to get clarity down the line, you know, relatively quickly on their roster and how they see it. And that's what they need right now.
Yeah. Well, my bad. Yeah. Well, what I think is notable about the timing of the hire is how rushed is maybe not the right word, but, like, you know, this came together so quick, and
right,
he may coach this week, which is, you know, rare. Even at times, you know, I could think of like college football a lot of times, right? When you have the coach that's fired, you even hire a coach before the bowl game. A lot of times that head coach doesn't even come in and coach the bowl game. He'll sit in a suite and like kind of oversee because they want to start their program in the offseason, fresh slate. Quinn Snyder's like maybe coaching like Tuesday against the Wizards, basically.
Right.
They just really want to
coming
speed
straight
up.
Off vacation, by the way. He was on vacation with his family at an undisclosed location. But yeah, he was living it up. And then
the intel
thing
that only Sam Amick can get.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, I just think that also means that Quinn Snyder might have some, you know, grander thoughts on what might need to be done this summer with this roster to you know, really boost it.
Right.
And he wants to get like on the ground zero answers before then. And, you know, not only obviously do the Hawks want to get him in and still have like probably some level of hope for a surprising run right now, but also like Quinn Snyder's like, I need to get in and like see the damage, right? It's like a renovator who's like, let me come in and look at the damage.
Well, and I think he needs his voice would not have a lot of credibility this summer if that's when he came into their program. You know what I mean? He wouldn't have the ability to say, here's what I see from this guy, that guy, here's what I want here, here's what I'm thinking there. You know, yes, now he can spend the summer with their group, you know, figuring out what they want to do based on how they play down the home stretch. They are 31-30 right now. And I mean, listen, it could have been worse. You know, I know they're below expectations, but they are, let's see. I mean, they're only 3.5 games out of the 6th spot. So if they want to avoid the play-in, you know, they can still do that. So interesting hire.
Same record
good
as the
hire.
Warriors, by the way, 31-30. Half the league, I feel like, is like hovering near 500.
No, it's crazy. All right, so that's news of the week number one. News of the week number two. Let's move on to Mr. Damian Lillard. Oakland's finest. A dude who just continues to, you know, kind of beat up the history books when it comes to the scoring front. You know, the one stat that jumped out at me that I should have been prepared with here, and maybe you've seen it, you can help me out here, Slater, but number of I think it was 50-point games. Well, shoot, I shouldn't have gone on that road if I didn't have the numbers. But he is doing things that even the greats of all time have not done. 71 points against the Houston Rockets. I have to admit, to get this kind of haterade out of my system right at the top here, like I struggle with it a little bit because I watched the tail end. It's incredible.
You're about to just kill the Rockets.
It's just the Rockets. They didn't make any adjustments. You know, he had 41 at halftime. They're not sending double teams his way. It didn't feel like they cared if he got to 70, 80, 90.
By the way, two nights earlier, they gave up 12 threes to Klay Thompson, and then they gave up 13 to Damian Lillard.
Right. So, here's the stat I was looking for. Dame has 5 60-point games in the last 5 seasons. James Harden has 3. He's number 2 on that list, and this is according to StatMuse. Great follow on Twitter if you feel like it. Nobody else in the league besides Lillard and Harden has more than 1 in the last 5 years. So, yeah, it's incredible, but it's only the Rockets. And then, yes, I'm also going down that road of, and I know this drives Dame crazy, but it just kind of is what it is. Is like the meaningfulness of the performance is minimized because I just look at that Blazers team and where are they going? They're not, you know, they're not really going anywhere. And I don't see him going anywhere anytime soon. I've always respected the hell out of his fight and his talent. And, you know, it was fun to watch. But he's in there late when the game is already decided. He's, you know, there's some hunting going on, which I do get. I can't be a hypocrite. I've had times when Steve Kerr would pull Clay, you know, when he's got 60 after 3 quarters, when you're kind of going, man, come on, like, let him cook, like, give the fans what they want. And so I have no problem with Chauncey Billups and the Blazers doing that with Dame. But I just, again, it's the same story we talk about with him. I wish that either the Blazers had found a way to put a better team around him at this point, you know, or he was somewhere else where they were more elite.
It was on in the Warriors locker room post game because the Warriors had an early tip last night. So, yeah. You know, Lillard was up to like 60 at that point when, like, you know, a lot of the Warriors players are kind of starting to filter out, talk to the media, all that. And, you know, some of the front office was watching, the Lillard game. And it was just funny because, you know, obviously most people are looking at the point total, but there was some conversation about the amount of threes he had made because This is Klay Thompson's right. Protected record of 14, which is the only one he has over Steph Curry. And he's very proud of, like, I've got one over Steph. And Dame almost touched it last night. You know, he had 13, Klay's at 14. And it was just a funny level of drama. And, like, to me, what it, you know, I guess punctuated for me, I mean, you're right on the grander Portland conversation, but it was just a very good punctuation to a very good weekend of basketball where two nights earlier I was in that same locker room and there's nine people, including a few players, really locked into Kings Clippers and that crazy game, final score going to OT. And it was like, it had been a while since I had felt since like, you felt like there was must-watch stuff going on in the league that even, you know, random opposing locker. There are players that are, like, not leaving to go home yet because they're like, oh, man, this is going double OT. Like, I kind of got to watch this right now. And it was like that with Lillard last night.
I love that. Now I'm like the negative Nancy today. But, like, to contrast that a little bit, the Blazers play in Sacramento a couple days before, and they had a disastrous time on the travel front. Where they were stuck on the tarmac for 7+ hours because of snow, ended up having to go back home that night rather than fly to Sacramento. So I get it, like very little sleep, but it was puzzling. They end up making their way to Sacramento, and you know the vast majority of the guys on the plane end up playing in the game, but the Blazers hold out Dame and Jeremy Grant, you know, and the Kings I'm sure loved it because they get the W that night and they got to not face this guy who's capable of dropping 70+. But, you know, I didn't quite understand that day why Dame and Jeremy didn't play. And there's just, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, coming out of the All-Star break where load management was a real hot topic, I don't agree with the commissioner. There's far too much of it. And I understand the revenue streams are still very healthy for the league. But anecdotally, this season, there has been far too many nights when you turn on a certain game and you're excited to see a certain matchup and the guys that you're there to watch are not there. So, to spin it positive, yes, it is nice to see, you know, at least early signs that that's changing down the stretch. It's somewhat natural because the games matter more. And, I mean, look at the Clippers. You kind of alluded to them. I mean, Kawhi Leonard, in his last roughly 18 games, I saw this stat last night, is playing like 37 minutes a night. I mean, that's fantastic. You know what I mean?
And looks good, by the way.
Looks great. Looks dangerous, you know, and they've dropped some tough games lately.
Why, really? They it's weird because like I'm coming off this week where they just lost to the Kings and the Nuggets. And by the way, signed Russell Westbrook, which I believe the last time we were podcasting, we were like, that would be a bad idea if they do that. Don't do that. And then they did. But so you would think, oh man, this is a week we should be talking like in Clipperland. I'm like feeling the opposite because of how good Kawhi looks. You know, their deadline additions, which are under the radar probably, right? Eric Gordon.
Yeah, I like him though.
But it helps. Like
Plumlee actually, man, he had some moments against the Nuggets. You know what? Let's save that for the handicap and the home stretch. We can talk a little more Clippers on that front. Let me quickly get through the end of the news of the week, Slater. You know, we hit on Quinn. We hit on Dame 71. This is not as sexy, but, you know, this is the tampering pod. We got to give you the kind of the meat and potatoes of the league's operations. So, like I said earlier, on the collective bargaining front, there's a March 31st mutual opt-out date for the current CBA. So both sides have been negotiating, you know, pretty consistently recently, making progress on talks to get a new deal done. And just, I guess the updates are, I mean, coming out of All-Star weekend, it was really clear to me, and I talked to both sides, that I would be stunned if they didn't get something done before that deadline, before the playoffs. And we're seeing that bear out even more now. Shams had reported that, you know, the luxury tax levels are one of the main, you know, kind of final points of contention that they are negotiating. And the general idea that because revenue has increased so much in recent years, player salaries goes along with that, that they want to make the lower levels of luxury tax less punitive, you know, and less prohibitive for teams that are trying to compete. And I'm sure Joe Lacob loves hearing that, although he's deeper into the tax.
But, you know, you save on the lower levels, you save overall in the bill, which is
right. It staggers like that.
Yeah.
For
you know,
sure.
And I'm sure that, you know, maybe the repeater is a conversation within there, you know, part of the reason the repeater was put in was to dissuade teams like the Warriors, teams like what the Clippers will probably be under the entire Steve Ballmer era of like, we don't care at all about the luxury tax. We're not just dipping into it for this little title window. We're just, you know, forever into it.
Right.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the tax rules are coming out of this.
Right. So, I mean, tax is a big one. The other big one that's going to be a talking point, you know, among the fans is the age eligibility in the draft. You know, all signs pointing to it being 18 and one and done being a thing of the past. And then an interesting, you know, and I couldn't really understand this during the union's press conference at All-Star Weekend. They alluded to this, and this was with C.J. McCollum, the union president, Grant Williams, you know, is now a VP, the top VP, you know, with Tamika Tramiglio, executive director. They talked about the idea that with, you know, the possibility of the draft age going down to 18, that there would be an attachment of sorts as far as veteran players, like some component where, you know, if you take a guy out of high school, you have to make sure you have veterans around him. And it seems like the incentive is twofold, or the objective is to preserve some of the jobs for the older guys, because obviously the younger the league gets, the more older guys get pushed out. But then also to value the mentorship and the experience stuff that does matter the younger the players are, and to make sure that there's the kind of voices in a locker room that can help a guy succeed and not just flounder because he's, you know, so inexperienced. So interesting stuff on the CBA front.
I just have heard Draymond Green grumble about that idea over the last, you know, couple years, that where it's like you have a lot of these, you know, full rebuild teams, and he'll just be like, why don't they have veterans in that locker room, right? Like, you're right. Just not teaching good lessons to these young players. So that is
like the Rockets are a good example. I saw this the other day. I mean, you know, Boban Marjanovic is the only vet left. You know, it's just a bunch of kids and Boban. And, you know, as affable a dude as he is, you know, that's not ideal.
He's not sitting down, like, really talking about the deep business of the NBA. He's just probably making some people laugh in the locker room.
Telling him how to be a play-by-play commentator. I don't know if you've seen that commercial, but it cracks me up.
He bounces, he dribbles, he pass.
All right, that's the news of the week. Let's keep it moving. Little light and fresh here. Handicap on the home stretch, man. Tell me where you want to go. I think you said...
I don't want to go anywhere. I want to go where we're both located currently.
Yes, yes, yes. I thought that's what you were going to say. All right, man. So...
Should we break and then talk about it?
Yes. I'll look at you. Good job. Andrew Schlecht, super producer, had told us to break, and I forgot. So on the other side, we are going to talk all things Beam Team. Sacramento Kings surging a bit coming out of the break. We're going to talk about Slater's Warriors, the Knicks, Mavs, Lakers... Maybe some Wolves, Clippers, Blazers, all of the above.
Sounds like we're talking about the entire league.
Yes, here it comes. Come join us. We'll be right back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBA Show 23 and get started.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, Slater, for those on YouTube who can see me not looking at the screen anymore, I'm looking at my phone and I'm trying to pull up a DM because I'm going to give a fun little shout out to a guy that I ended
Sam
up.
Sam revealing his DMs, right?
Yeah, baby. Okay, so.
Scroll past the other three, the more salacious ones. All right, find the one you're looking for.
See, and I hope I'm not, hope I'm getting this right here, but like, that this is a Kings related conversation. So I, the other day, turned on local news, Good Day Sacramento, which, they do a nice job. They're always on our TV in the mornings.
Sam Amick would just be chugging coffee watching Good Day Sacramento.
That's right, man. That's right. So there's a young man by the name of Denzel Joyce, IG tag young_ZEL, Young Zell. And he was performing his rendition of Light the Beam, which is a song he wrote to honor this King season. And I think timing-wise, I think this is post-All-Star break, but before any of the games. And so as I saw it, I had that, for the sake of the Kings fans, that familiar sense of angst where it was like, oh my God, the hype is so through the roof. Like, what if they don't keep playing well? And so he's on local news, like dropping this song that's pretty slick. I liked it, and it's all about the beam and what the Kings are doing. And so we actually exchanged a few notes because I tagged him on IG. But then Slater, listen, so far they come out the gates just fine. They beat Portland. Again, it's not their fault that Dame and Jeremy didn't play, but they take care of business there, even though they were down 19-4 in that game, which was kind of crazy. Then they pull off that Clippers game that, maybe I have recency bias, but I personally cannot remember a crazier NBA game in the regular season ever. I really don't know.
Warriors, Thunder, 2016, sure. With Steph, deep three. But, I mean, it was the game of the season. I think that's obvious.
Well, and I don't have all the numbers in front of me, but, I mean, they were down like 11 with about, 3-4 minutes to go, dead in the water. They were down big in the first OT. They were down, I think, 6 late in the second OT. I mean, my God, from a scoring standpoint, the thing that I loved, and we're not going to just hammer the Kings Clippers game. We're going to talk, where the Kings are going. But the thing I loved is that, they don't play, their defense is terrible most nights. In that particular game, I actually thought the effort was there. And it sounds crazy because it was 153 all after regulation. But Kawhi Leonard was just unconscious, getting, contests almost every time and still just dropping everything. De'Aaron Fox, Malik Monk, Paul George having a good night. The shot making and the skill on the offensive side was an absolute pleasure to watch. And it was just an incredibly fun game. But I do think it showed a ton for the Kings about this character that they apparently are building and the way that they are competing. And, they follow that up by beating OKC. Again, they catch a little break because Shea Gilgeous-Alexander had
a lot of breaks.
That's
they
a
do.
Big break. Ankle problem, yeah. So he didn't play. But, yeah, Kings are 3-0 out of the break and relieving some of that local angst.
Yeah, to emphasize your point, I sat down with Mike Brown on Wednesday. So this is the day
before. Was that in person? I read the piece. I didn't know it was in person. Okay.
Yep. Sat down with him on Wednesday and – that was the day before the second half began, the post All-Star break. And he shared the same concerns that you had of like, we've done a lot to this point. Like the three seed seems like awesome, but like look below us. Like,
right.
You let your foot off the gas pedal for 10 days and, the Kings are ninth or something like that. And it is he's a funny guy to talk to right now because we know who he is at his core. This like defensive hound. You go back to his Cleveland Cavaliers days, it's like ground and pound, like bottom 10 in pace. Like, LeBron will will us to 95 points, and we will hold the other team to 89, right, basically. And he's currently the head coach of the number one offense in NBA history, I think they are at this point after this week. And they're really high in pace, and they're like, they're the three seed, and only, by the way, 1.5 games out of the two seed, which is crazy. Yet they're still like 24th in defense. So it's like, he's having this, like, he might, you know, he's a coach of the year candidate quite clearly, yet he's like, just like, you know, I think fidgeting over there on the sidelines on a nightly basis because, you know, he never, I don't think he ever envisioned winning an NBA game 176-175. You know, and it's like,
they came part of close the reason to the all-time record, man.
Yeah, I mean, part of the reason Kawhi's going off the other day is, you know, they don't really have much wing defense. I know that's an issue with the team, but the one thing that I think we all could say about the Kings, like, they've really optimized the regular season for them, and it's just been a really good story. There's a reason nationally people are into this team, not even, you know, the gimmick of the beam, which, by the way, I was driving home from Warriors Wolves last night, and it was early tip, so I was passing by downtown Sacramento before midnight. That thing was beaming into the sky. I could see it from the highway. So but it's just like, you know, you've railed against load management, and we've talked about, hey, it's good this week to finally have regular season games that people seem to care about. Well, that's been their entire season. They have been into every game. That crowd has been into every game. And it's just, I think it's been good for the sport to have a team like them that is like, it does feel like an old school, like, attacking of a regular season. Their starters have played some insane amount of minutes together, by far the highest five-man total in the league. And it's just, you know, I think I'd be worried about them in the playoffs because they in some ways are a regular season team where when rivals might match their intensity level, match their focus on a nightly basis, that might take away some of their advantage that they've had. But, man, they're a good story.
They are. No, they are. And, I mean, I hit on this a little bit last week on the pod when you weren't with us. But at All-Star Weekend, no, I guess I didn't. We didn't pod after All-Star Weekend. I'm sorry. The Kings had an off-the-record brunch at All-Star Weekend. And I enjoyed stopping by and seeing some people. And what struck me a little bit is that going in,
I was there.
Though that's kind of the thing. Like, it was, you know, Vivek Ranadive essentially hosted, and I rolled by initially with the intent of stopping for probably literally 20-30 minutes because player availability was later in that day for the All-Stars, and so I thought, well, I don't have a lot of time, but I'll pop in. And I was falsely assuming that it was going to be, you know, Vivek and a few of his closest friends and like a fairly small, quaint affair. And you know, it's not the type of thing you see a lot at All-Star Weekend. Not every single team throws a brunch or whatnot. And so I get there, and it's like a veritable who's who of NBA folks. You know, Adam Silver stopped by for a while. Rich Paul was there. Bill Duffy was there, prominent agents.
Look, what the Kings are dragging some power hitters in there.
I know. Well, this you know, De'Aaron Fox now repped by Clutch Sports, so that made some sense. But I mean, all you got to know is that I ended up kind of posting up in the middle of the restaurant with some folks and did not make it to player availability. I ended up, you know, enjoying myself, and it was a great, you know, relationship networking place. Had a good time and appreciate the hospitality.
This is, by the way, what a scene I am just envisioning right now. It's almost like a Godfather type, like, Italian restaurant with power hitters everywhere. And then you go to the back and it's Sam Amick on a couch. And there's just, you know, there's GMs, there's commissioners around. And like, they all want to get, can we bend your ear for 5 minutes, Sam?
Yeah, it wasn't like that. It was like, hey, this is Shams. He's over here talking to folks. Shams.
Well, another power hitter in the building. You continue to show.
I'm already sharing too much. It's off the record brunch. But it was like, the point is that, like, people showed out, and the vibe, you know, with the Kings in general was very positive. Shaq came by, another heavy hitter.
Was 50 Cent there? He's been at like seven Kings games.
Ron Artest was there. I got to hang with my guy Ron, which I got to be honest, the old
Daniel Artest.
No Daniel. Although I did tell Ron recently about our Twitter interview with Daniel, which was pretty epic.
That was an Athletic live podcast which maybe we should do one in the future, but that was fun.
No doubt. But, like, yeah, I mean, Kenny Thomas, Ron Artest, all the Kings luminaries.
Peja?
No Peja.
Peja's son, by the way, for anybody who doesn't know, is like an awesome player in the Sacramento area.
We're going deep
player.
On the Kings now. Look at you.
I mean, I feel like, you know, this is what we're here for, in-depth.
Andre Stojakovic headed to Stanford.
He's going to Stanford. That's right. Yeah, he's like a really good local high school player.
No, indeed. Absolutely. But no, that again, but it kind of dovetails with the whole, you know, the guy in the local news, you know, rapping about Light the Beam and on the entire vibe. I'm sitting there looking at All-Star Weekend going, man, they better come out of this break with some fire. And to their credit, they have. They got OKC tomorrow, and, you know, it's going to be a tough stretch from there, but it's pretty massive that they've even created the room they've created coming out of the break in these first three games.
Yeah, you again, like, you know, I wrote a story that was all about what's below them, because, you know, and to this day, they should still be very concerned with that, but suddenly they win yesterday, and I'm looking at the standings. I'm like, they're 1.5 behind the Grizzlies for right. two?
Right.
Like, it's interesting.
It is indeed. All right. Also, in the handicap and the homestretch thing, before we get to your Warriors, Slater, I would like to talk about the Mavs and by proxy, the New York Knicks. And I think you can probably guess where I'm going there. The Mavs drop they're up 27 against the rebuilt Lakers. The Jared Vanderbilt-led Lakers.
Yeah, what a comeback from Jared Vanderbilt. He was making plays.
He was, indeed. And again, you know, 6 degrees of Kings. They tried hard to get him, and they couldn't. He would look good in a Kings uniform.
Seems like half the league did.
No doubt. So the Mavs now have lost 3 out of their last 4 games with Kyrie and Luka playing together. They have another late game. I mean, they have had a disastrous run when it comes to late game situations with Luka and Kyrie. They just have not been on the same page. Kyrie inbounds to Luka, trying to get it. Luka apparently thought he was getting it at the half-court line, but Kyrie was trying to lead him into the backcourt. And next thing you know, Vanderbilt breaks it up, and that's it. That's a wrap. Lakers win. And so the Mavs, you know, these early stages of the Kyrie Irving Mavs are not looking great, and it's like, my goodness, you talk about optics. You look up and you say, oh, you know who is playing pretty well? Is the New York Knickerbockers. 5 in a row. Since they were, I'm pulling this up, I think 18-18, roughly. I'm close. It's in that ballpark around December 31st. They have won 17 out of 26 games. Jalen Brunson in that span averaging almost 29 points a game, about six assists almost and about 4 boards. I mean, Jalen Brunson, I get it. The Mavs didn't know he was going to take this jump. You know, nobody knew he was going to take this jump, but the idea that they obviously could have had him next to Luka and should have extended him earlier, like we've talked about countless times, it just looks rougher and rougher, especially considering the Kyrie experiment is not going perfectly so far.
Yeah, wish we had Fred Katz for this Jalen Brunson segment, but
right.
The Kyrie Luka, I still, as a playoff pairing, they're going to be so dangerous. I mean, we've seen what Luka does in a playoff setting, as just like kind of a one-on-one threat and score. And we've seen what Kyrie in the LeBron days, the Cleveland days, can be as like that dangerous sidekick next to, you know, a big scoring forward, passing forward. So I still would handicap them as one of the larger threats in the West. But you know, they got growing pains. And yesterday, I mean, you can see it late in the game. I can remember one possession where it's like Luka's trying to post up. I believe he has Schroeder on him on a switch, but they're kind of, you know, shading a double. And it's just an awkward possession where it's like Kyrie's trying to force feed Luka. And I think in a lot of ways, Kyrie's come into this situation, like really trying to make it work. And part of that, right, is it's not the, hey, when it's your turn, my turn, I want it to be my turn. It's almost the opposite, right? Like, please, it's your turn. Like, no, like, it's your team, Luka. But that has created this weird, you know, oversharing and like, you know, they don't know who should attack when. And then suddenly it's late in the clock and it's a step back 19 footer. And I think a large part of the comeback yesterday is like they just wilted offensively at a time when you would think like that is their advantage, right? To have those two late in games, they should be elite closers and they're just not there right now.
Well, and it's the opposite again of we talked about the Kings coming out well out of the break and the Mavs, you know, they've now lost 4 out of 5. They're in 6th place in the West. They're now flirting with the play-in tournament. They're only a half game up on your Warriors for play-in status. And, you know, if it had gone the other way, they could be pushing the Kings for that 3rd seed. So, you know, I don't know where it all goes, but it really does. It's one of the more compelling situations to monitor down the stretch because of the stakes of it all, right? The idea that Kyrie went to Dallas with zero promises made about what he would do in free agency. And, you know, we can only evaluate what's in front of us in the moment. So, you know, as of right now, you look at it and go, oh boy, like, you know, if you're Kyrie and this is how it's going to go, then who knows where his head is at this summer. You know, when you look at things like Lakers being a possibility, Phoenix being a possibility, a lot of ifs, you know, in between those two teams and others. But yeah, Mavs struggling coming out of the break. You know, Lakers, I mean, are we buying the this version of the Lakers? They've had a good couple of games here. I've heard some parallels that I liked about how their roster construction now more closely resembles the 2020 championship team that they had in the bubble, more depth, more versatility on the wing. And again, the Vanderbilt thing has been good. Beasley as well.
It was a great trade. You know, and even when D'Angelo Russell's out there, he's going to catch and shoot and make three. So he's going to spread the floor, which is what they need. You saw Vanderbilt likes like they don't win that game if Jared Vanderbilt isn't just flying around changing the energy of the game. He had that one play on the sideline where he just like hustle steals, like falling out of bounds, fires it like I think righty, like kind of hook pass over his shoulders. He's falling out of bounds like right to somebody for a layup. Like that's the type of play that's 2 points there and it just like juices up the team. And then suddenly, you know, players are basically slapping the floor defensively to go get another stop. So like that right there, if you just like, you know, you make a trade at the deadline, like how many wins does this help us get? Well, like check one and like they don't win that game yesterday if they don't make that trade, right?
Right.
So, and they need every win they can get. But so I do think I'm like higher on their potential, much higher than I thought I'd ever be this season right now. But at the same time, I think you saw the concern yesterday where, you know, that them actually making a contending run, which they're trying to do, requires like at this point, what, like 3 months of like every night do or die basketball from LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Davis, who we know his injury history, and then LeBron, who has unbelievable his career has been from a durability standpoint. It's like he's clearly going through some health stuff. He's really limping out of the arena yesterday. You know, I mean, everyone who was watching the game saw this whole situation with it seemed like his ankle. I just like, do they hold up physically? Because they need to be out there to win every night.
Where's your 3 month window? Not to push back
on it.
Well,
what is it? It's February 27th. So February, April to May, you know. That's like, you know, because they're not just talking about, I mean, I know right now the goal is like squeak in the playoffs, but they're not trying to squeak in to go down 4-1 in the first round.
Right.
If they get in the playoffs, okay, let's say they do. Let's say they power through these 20 games. They get in even as a six seed. They don't even have to do the play-in. Well, you know, it won't feel like, oh, they're really fresh for game one, round one. They might be exhausted for game one, round one. So that's my concern is just like the 3.5 months of like do or die basketball like has already started.
No, but it will be again. This is the story of the season. And what I am really enjoying about it, you know, load management issues aside is, you know, Adam Silver at All-Star Weekend declared that it was the most competitive season in NBA history. That is something that is, you know, evidence-based where they've studied it. And that's the conclusion they've come to. I talked to Evan Wash, who is their schedule mastermind at the NBA, about that topic as well. And it's something that they are feeling good about, you know, on the basketball side, of course, but that translates to business. And the parity is great. And the Lakers are going to be fun to watch down the line. I know we've had debates in the past about, you know, would you prefer greatness, like your Warriors just, you know, lapping the field and making it clear that they are on a level above everybody else. I think we still have greatness here. You know what I mean? Like, the Denver's Milwaukee's are, you know, Milwaukee's a championship team that is trying to get back there.
Boston, I don't know that we have, like, greatness.
I think we have elite teams, though. I mean, Milwaukee good and Boston. Teams.
But, no, man. I mean, I don't agree. Like,
where are we at here? Let's look at the standings. I mean, it's not, it's certainly not
dynasty.
The Nuggets,
how many games are the Nuggets going to win this year?
See, you're just salty because I dropped the Nuggets first, and that just puts you down the...
Well, I just remember the 2016 season. You obviously the West had a 73 win team, a 67 win team. The Spurs won 67 games. They were the second seed that year. The Thunder, I remember, had this like they were 55 win team, which is what literally might get the one seed this year in the West. And they were like it was, they were disappointed. It was the last year of Durant. It was the first year of Billy Donovan. They were entering the playoffs as a 55-win team, feeling like they had no shot.
The Celtics are on pace to win 59. So what does that mean? How do you?
I mean, that's the league's pretty low for, you know, the Suns. You know, I know it didn't translate, but what, the Suns won like 65 games or something like that last year.
Right. I do hear you. It's not the same as those years by any means. At least I do enjoy the fact that we have, you know, the Boston, Milwaukee's, Denver's, you know, to a lesser degree. I mean, Philly's played well lately. They're a few games back, but you know, there is an upper crust, and then there is a jam-packed middle that makes it fun for, I think, a lot of fans, a lot of fan bases, and a lot of teams. So let's flip it in that vein to talk about your middling Warriors and Wolves in the game that you just covered. That's another one where you have teams, you know, staring at each other in the standings. They are now, after that game, a game apart, Warriors in seventh.
Yeah, they were tied. They were tied at 500, of course. It's like
right. The
place right. to be right now.
So let's start with your team. You know, just such a slog of a season for that whole group. You know, how did they feel about yesterday?
I mean, satisfied with the win, because any win right now is like so necessary for them. It's not been a good season. I'm still very skeptical of them coming together at the right time and making, like, you know, repeating last season. I personally don't see it, but the only reason they still, and I wrote about this post game, the only reason that this dream of a repeat is still at least realistic is because they're actually 11-12 without Steph in 23 games without Steph this season. Nine of those 11 wins have also come without Andrew Wiggins, who a lot of people would say, at least in the playoffs, might have been their second best player. Draymond Green right now is dealing with a knee flare-up. He's missed the last two games, yet they've still won them. So they've been missing basically their three best players at the last two games and won. And just the fact, like, you know, the story in previous years, even back to the Durant days, is like their inability to survive without Steph Curry on the floor, right?
Right.
Well, I mean, 11-12 without Steph has made it so they are 31-30 instead of, you know, 24 and whatever right now, and, like, you know, down below the Lakers essentially. So that has creaked open the door for the idea of a Steph return, a Wiggins return, a Draymond return at some point in the next few weeks, and then, you know, they try to make a run, which, you know, again, I would. Not predict that at all. I do not think it's coming, but it's at least still on the table because of, you know, games like yesterday where Klay Thompson, who maybe you want to talk about a little bit, but Klay Thompson's had a really good 2 months. Like, he, you know, he's up above 40% from three on a very high volume. He's scoring like crazy, and he has won them these last two games, 42 against Houston, 32 yesterday. He's been great.
All right, Slater. Well done, man. We got good chemistry today, brother. I'm ready for you. You want these numbers from December 27th? To now for Mr. Klay Thompson.
Yeah.
Mr. He's washed after all those injuries. I'm just trying to lean into his kind of, you know, everybody hates me vibe. Klay Thompson in 22 games, the Warriors going 12-10 in those games that he played in since December 27th. I'm going to start with that 3-point percentage because that's what he does above all else. You talk about high volume, 12.1 attempts during that stretch at 44.4%, 44 on 12. Maybe hyperbole here. You can check me if I need to be checked. Have we seen a stretch like that in the mid 40s on that kind of volume ever?
I mean, from Klay or otherwise, because his teammate has done that
on 12.
Steph, yeah,
at mid 40s. All right.
Well, let me. Yeah.
I'm just saying that's something, man.
I mean, his game against the Rockets was hilarious. He went 12-19 overall, but that was 12-17 from three. 17 of his 19 shots were threes, and all 12 of his makes were threes. It's just, you know, and as you said, the Rockets weren't exactly, you know, locking
Steph,
it down.
Just for context, Steph in that stretch, although only 12 games, is 41.2% on basically 11 threes a game. So I mean, my God, man, almost 45%.
How about this one for you, sir? The unanimous MVP season 2016, Steph Curry, for the entire season, 79 games, he was 45.4% from three on 11.2 attempts per game.
That's less than 12.
Okay. And won the unanimous MVP.
I did vote for him that year, hence the unanimous pardon. Yeah, I mean, Clay, I mean, you're writing it every day, but honestly, nationally, we probably need to give Clay a little more flowers, you know? He is a major part in them keeping their head above water during the stretch.
Yeah, and you know, you would appreciate this, Mr. PBWA, but his press conferences have been very good and like very reflective post game.
Okay, proud of Clay. Good job, Clay. That's the Pro Basketball Writers Association for people.
He's been in like a, you know, when people play well, they're in a good mood. When people don't play well, they're in a grumpy mood. That's like pretty normal, I guess, league wide. But he's been like very revealing too.
Is he talking? One of my favorite Clay, you know, habits is talking to the gem of the human being, Janie McCauley of the Associated Press, about his swimming habits. It always cracks me up.
I don't know that it was a swimming habit, but there's been, you know, random conversations coming in and coming out of the media room where he's fielding all inquiries about basically anything.
Nice, nice. I like
he
it.
He was no, talking Clay's yesterday. Killing. He hit a three late yesterday, and then he did this weird taunting, hopping thing towards the bench. It was a little bit reminiscent of the Dylan Brooks thing he did on Christmas at the Wolves bench. It was like, well, you know, why'd you do that? And it was because he was going after Joe Boylan, one of the Minnesota assistants going back to his rookie year, was like a player development guy. And, you know, apparently every time he goes against Joe Boylan, he just starts yelling at Joe Boylan. He said, well, they enjoy yelling at each other. So.
I'm going to love post-playing retirement commentating Clay, like to see if he, you know, channels his dad style, you know, because Michael is a total pro on the Lakers side, but he's got a little of that.
Every time the Warriors play the Lakers pregame has me on the radio, and that's Alan from LA and Michael Thompson. So I go on with Michael Thompson, and it's hilarious because it's Clay's dad, yet he has like, you know, pretty hot takes at times, including I was on the other day and he was just, they're going to rue the day they traded James Wiseman. They will rue the day. Wow. And I'm just like, well, this is like, Clay's dad is like really upset about the James Wiseman. Not upset, but like he was like very critical of the James Wiseman trade. And I'm just like, yeah, it's kind of interesting, I guess.
Did you approach Clay in the locker room and say, your father says that you will rue the day that you traded James Wiseman?
I didn't agree. But maybe I should. I mean, you know, Clay, at this point, how many times in his life has he had somebody come up to him and be like, did you see what your dad said?
As an aside, man, I love the whole Thompson family. I got together with some of my family yesterday, was telling my sister Kelly about this, how Clay's uncle, Andy, is just an incredibly accomplished, and we've had him on the pod. You know, Andy's an NBA videographer who has been shooting everything, like the best footage in the league going back to the mid-80s with Michael and all the Last Dance stuff, to LeBron's entire career, to stuff with the Warriors. You know, you got Andy being a rock star in his space, Michael doing his thing, you know, Clay's brother coaching on the team as well, you know, Clay doing his thing. So good for the Thompsons. They're out there getting theirs.
Yeah. Any other teams we want to hit? Well, I mean, the Wolves.
Yeah,
part
let's
of
that. Finish on the Wolves. I think. Yeah. Yeah. Let's go ahead and wrap up this fine episode of Tampering with some Wolves talk. Just observations that you saw in their new kind of Mike Conley iteration as they try to salvage all things Rudy Gobert.
So it's interesting. The last two times the Warriors played Minnesota, like obviously Towns is out. You know, it sounds like maybe he'll come back pretty soon, but he's missed several months at this point. But
Let me interrupt super fast later. This is terrible podcasting, but I don't want to. I just made a massive Warriors mistake. Can you give us a quick update because the listeners need to know on Steph and when you think he's coming back?
Yeah, I saw him on the practice court yesterday, pregame, going through a pretty, you know, high intensity individual workout, you'd say. And then, you know, he seems to be in a peppier mood in the locker room. They're officially given a reevaluation Wednesday. I mean, he's out for sure Tuesday night. I wouldn't necessarily expect him, like, you know, right away Thursday, but he's getting closer. I think in the next week to 10 days, it's possible to see him.
Okay. Good stuff.
Andrew Wolves Wiggins also remains away from the team. Very private matter that they're not revealing specifics on. He's now missed 13 days. No clue at this point. They don't seem to have a clue when he'll be back. Draymond Green has now missed two games with a knee flare-up. It doesn't seem overly serious, but he had like a setback apparently. So he's no clue on him either.
Okay. Now, as for those Wolves, they've now lost 7 out of 11 And like you just kind of mentioned, weren't able to beat a Warriors team without Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and Andrew Wiggins. What are your thoughts on them?
Yeah, so I mean, as I was saying, like no Gobert, no Towns in both of the last two Warriors Wolves games, and the first one, Naz Reid starting at center goes for 24-13. Wolves actually won that game. That was like February 1st, I think. And then yesterday, hit 18-6 in the first quarter, first 10 minutes.
Good lord!
Yeah, I don't. He finished with like 27,
30, and, so, and no 30-9. I got it here.
30-9. There you go. Yeah. Yeah, he was like dominant in the first quarter, and it's just. I mean, it's kind of a weird situation they are they're in the center spot.
James Wiseman.
There you go. That will rue the day. Yeah, right. And you know the way Naz Reid's played so well, like he's going to play himself probably into some money this summer. And you know, can it be with Minnesota? I'm sure if it's coming back to a team's with Towns and Gobert on it, like Naz Reid probably doesn't want it to be in Minnesota because he doesn't want to be a third center, especially the way he plays at times when he's given opportunity. Obviously, they're not playing that well. I mean, I think part of that reason is their theoretical best player, Karl-Anthony Towns, has now missed however many consecutive games. So I'd like to see him back before making like sweeping judgments about their season being a failure, but they're not in a good place.
Yeah, and again, we're going to end on a downer note, but you know, this is the time to surge if you're trying to do your thing on the playoff push, and they are not doing that. So I like it, man. This was good. We made our rounds around the league. Any other final thoughts that come to mind? You know, we did almost touch on the entire association. Not a lot of East Coast, but, you know, we hit the Knicks.
We're West Coast. I think we're known as West Coast.
We got to be league-wide, brother. We got to be. That's what cats is for. Fred will be back next
week.
We got to
give the intel we got. And, you know, when you're the godfather of the Sacramento Kings powwow at All-Star Weekend.
What does that make you if I'm the godfather? You're quickly moving up the food chain.
I don't know. I mean, there's probably a Sopranos or like a Godfather reference in there. And I don't know. We don't need to get too deep into
now cue the Godfather music, Mr. Schlecht. All right, thank you, as always, to the listeners for joining us. Always enjoy doing this. Slater, good seeing you, and we'll catch up soon. Thanks, everybody.
Yep.